Mercedes had a qualifying trick that was banned by the FIA this week. And what did the internet do in reaction? They called them cheaters. A little bit too hastily, in my opinion. Because upon reflection, they really didn't cheat. And besides, there's a lot more interesting stuff to talk about this aspect anyway, so buckle in. The meat of this particular sandwich comes from what the race actually reported. Granted, the original revelation isn't anything new. I've talked about it on the channel before, but the speed of action from the FIA was snappier than I expected. I will give them that. But since this is a really huge part of my video, I'll give you a little bit more colour, as in elaborate on the news. Under these regulations, as a car burns through its battery on a qualifying lap, the power has to reduce in a controlled way approaching the timing line. A mandatory ramp down of 50 kilowatts per second, designed to prevent a cliff edge power loss that would be dangerous at speed. Mercedes and Red Bull found that triggering a legitimate MGUK shutdown also bypassed that ramp down requirement entirely. With the MGUK officially disabled for technical reasons, the car could run at maximum deployment all the way to the finish line. So we're not talking about huge tenths that could be game-changing, absolutely. It's really something that will give them that little bit more. But sometimes in Formula One, especially at the front, hundredths can make the difference between a grip place or two. It's enough to give you that little bit more power out of the final corner so you're not bleeding power all the way to that final meter. And once you've finished and you're on your cooldown lap, you don't need all 1,000 horsepower, just 570-odd will do, because that's what Mercedes has with the internal combustion engine. Now, I almost ran with the idea that they were using the whole thing the entire time. When I first discovered that they had used this technique as well as Red Bull, I was absolutely flabbergasted, and I thought this could be an absolute game changer. But I stopped myself from just calling them systematic cheaters, because, well, this isn't a cheat. This is something that the rules had not really clarified over properly. And quite honestly, I'm more fascinated and intrigued that they discovered this solution rather than completely outraged. It's not that dissimilar to what McLaren did with the Mini DRS a couple of years ago, as in it was a clever little loophole within the rules that could easily be milked upon by any designer should they actually discover it. And the same thing happened with the likes of Mercedes and Red Bull. But like the Mini DRS, this could be something that is very, very track specific, because as the race's article went on to actually elaborate on, it wasn't used for every single Grand Prix we've had thus far. Like with the Mini DRS, it could only be used when the straights were long enough, like we saw in Baku. It would have been good at Vegas and not really anywhere else. However, the social media trend these days is just to shout "witch" and condemn these situations. That Mercedes were bending the rules every Saturday while the fans celebrated the wrong thing. I get why it spread. It does sound damning. The problem is, though, when you stop for a moment, the timeline doesn't really hold up. The headline caused folks to run away with that notion. Because read the article more closely. It states that it wasn't used during the Chinese Grand Prix weekend. The run from the final corner to the timing line at Shanghai was too short to make the game worth the complication. In Japan, Mercedes actually turned off the solution before the FIA cottoned on immediately. I mean, it obviously didn't help that the Casio triangle right before the start-finish line was not that far to really make the exploit worthwhile, but also there had been complications over the course of free practice for both Red Bull and Mercedes that would have aroused a little bit more suspicion. Antonelli and Verstappen were left without power as they came out of the S's, and that looked really, really suspicious, as in, oh, you haven't got all that power to hand. Why is that? And as for Alex Albon, he stopped on the circuit entirely, another Mercedes-powered car. In fact, Ferrari went to the FIA weeks earlier, according to that race article, on the grounds of the MGUK suddenly turning off and you suddenly lose all power, at least half of it. And not because they wanted to try and copy the trick for themselves, that is very, very clear here. I know that we all thought that this might be the return of Ferrari international aid, and it kind of is partly because Ferrari did go to the FIA, but in reality, it was really more on the safety side of things. So yeah, in Mercedes' mind, the practice was just too risky to continue because it would have only attracted attention and may have actually risked them being disqualified from qualifying and having to start at the back. It really was not worth at least trying out for one Q1 lap, otherwise they might have been rumbled. Why risk tarnishing their good run up until that point and then continued onto the Sunday? Well, I mean, at least for the Italian Stappen, but we'll get to him in a bit. But out of all of this, one race definitely did yield some really meaningful gains from this technique, and that was, of course, the first race, the Australian Grand Prix. That's the actual story here, folks. Mercedes abandoned the tactic before any formal ban or clarification. In terms of the FIA language, whenever a clarification comes around, that's almost akin to the FIA and Joe Bauer going, are you sure you want to play with that fire Formula One team? Because we're looking and we're going to make things clear. So whenever you get rumblings that that's about to happen, it's them hinting, you better change things. Sure enough, the regulators of Formula One have actually confirmed all of this in writing. The shutdown function is for genuine emergencies only. Going forward, they'll be closely checking the data at the end of qualifying laps to ensure that particular shenanigan isn't pulled again. So yeah, the loophole is closed. And when you think about it, Red Bull's lost this tactic too, and they were battling for the fourth row on average. I mean, wow, they're losing several senior people, and now they're losing a qualifying salvo too, to get them into Q3 maybe? And then all of the rumours about Hannah Schmidt recently? Aside from all of that though, the rage and the celebrations have ultimately wound up at the wrong address. And the person who's ultimately benefited most out of all of this has actually not really said much about it. In fact, barely anything at all. Far less than the average Mercedes employee to boot. It's also the second time in recent months that the FIA has gone out of their way to close or amend a loophole that Mercedes has actually been able to gamify and they had discovered over the winter. You know, the whole compression ratio approach. Running the engine at around 18 to 1 at operating temperature while still clearing ambient checks at 16 to 1. That was pre-cleared before the season started. Rivals had flagged it months ago, so from the start of June, in time for Monaco, so in just 3 races' time, the measurement gets taken at operating temperatures. How will that affect Mercedes-powered teams? It's too early to say. The ballpark figure amongst many pundits is that it offers an extra 10-15 brake horsepower or something. That doesn't sound a lot in the grand scheme of things, but when you look at the charts that have become available according to Autoracer, that the gap between Honda and Mercedes is around 70-odd in terms of the internal combustion side of things, and Ferrari, Audi, and Honda will benefit from the ADUO, get that little bit closer. If Mercedes gets taken down a peg or two, then actually it decreases the gap and therefore extends the competition. This might end up being more important than you might think. It might all come down to the battery. Because Ferrari stands to gain a fair bit out of this, because even though their chassis is really, really good and they're great in the corners, their engine is relatively weak in comparison to Mercedes. And out of all of this, Red Bull 4 powertrains, they made a banger. It's just a shame the chassis is letting the side down. We'll find out the full ramifications of this in June, and probably after Monaco, since that's really not a power circuit. But anyway, that's two tools Mercedes discovered over the winter gone before we've even gotten close to the European leg of the season, where the real meat of a championship campaign can be really established. It changes the scope of the team that had been flooding the zone of the media circus of Formula One throughout the entire winter. It also neuters a lot of the gamesmanship they could employ as well, including sandbagging. Right now, Mercedes looks like a team that's trying to hope that the homework that they had done over the winter will endure in terms of its effectiveness and strength, as everyone else is busy looking over their shoulders. And the FIA, who's the teacher of this classroom, is not exactly going out of their way to tell anyone off and try and stop anyone from getting closer to Mercedes. You know, they're turning a blind eye, almost. But yes, you do need to look back to the winter and all of the stuff that I covered on the channel and everyone else within the F1 media sphere was doing. We were all talking about Mercedes. We were all hyping up Mercedes because the evidence looked compelling, because there was just so much of it. Toto Wolff wouldn't stop talking. And he also wasn't hedging his bets. He was loud and proud and extremely imperious looking. The speculation from journalists and paddock gossip was rich enough to back him up. And when the W17 was launched and we got all of the bump from press releases, it got ramped up considerably. All of the pre-season positioning and posturing, the tone coming out of Brackley, that was not cautious optimism. They looked ready to fight and to take back titles that they had thought that they had been denied over the course of their wilderness years, the entire ground effect era. Testing looked promising in terms of competitiveness, that they would definitely be up there, they were raking in the laps, but admittedly, I realised something was up in regards to their reliability. There were moments, especially during the Barcelona shakedown, where they were showing moments when they weren't exactly firing on all cylinders. And Ferrari, in comparison, they looked a little bit more robust, a little bit more consistent. Or if they did have problems, they were quickly rectified. And then Haas, a Ferrari customer, they were absolutely stonkingly fantastic and consistent. But despite that, they did look into it and they did arrive in Melbourne with a car that went on to get a 1-2. albeit with plenty of mistakes and gaffes and issues along the way. But ultimately, they got the result. It doesn't matter. Maximum points, 1-2, point proven. And of course, Toto Wolff told the media there was so much contentment within the team that they could fight for a world championship again instead of having to settle for a distant second place. But that's still a very respectable result, Toto. But in the eyes of the Austrian, not good enough. But you gotta realise, folks, Mercedes' wilderness years, they weren't exactly abysmal. It's not the same as when McLaren had their wilderness years when they fell as low as 9th out of 10 in the constructors. The worst Mercedes got was a somewhat remotely distant 4th place. The W13, which everyone at Mercedes was agog about in how bad it was still 3rd place, only 39 points behind Ferrari, who were the pre-season favourites. So even then, their wilderness years weren't exactly wild and morose. They were disappointing, but they weren't to the level of absolute anguish and pain and misery and sorrow that Toto was trying to convey at the time. But okay, let's bring this back to 2026. Because 3 weeks later, after the Japanese Grand Prix and with wins and the team title lead, the same man was telling everyone who'd listened that what looked like a home run in the first two races was not the case. And there is no Bahrain Grand Prix or Saudi Grand Prix to help increase their lead in the constructors. Miami would indeed, in Toto's eyes, be a reset, echoing exactly what his buddy Fred said not long after the Japanese race when Miami would be a completely new championship. I thought Fred was teasing and being punchy for the sake of Ferrari, but no. This tells me that teams have learned some things, and both Fred and Toto, who are very much bosom buddies, and very politically strong in the fight back against major regulation change, realise that some regulation change may have to go down. They are just going to fight tooth and nail to have as few changes done this year as possible. Well, I mean, because they're both in contention for championships. But either way, the Mercedes advantage that they thought that they had was not as big as we had feared, and it may not last for long. Because even McLaren signalling that they finally got a hand of the Mercedes power unit, probably after some backroom lobbying and a lot of angry words from Zak Brown, and of course they got a big upgrade package coming from Miami. And we all know what happened the last time McLaren introduced a comprehensive package at a Miami Grand Prix weekend. They arrived there that year in a similar position to this year, pace-wise I must stress, not reliability-wise, and they found something in that car nobody else had, and began their fight back to take that year's constructor's crown. That redefined the championship for the team standing in Formula One, and the lesson wasn't lost on anyone watching. There's also a difference between a team principal doing routine expectation management and one who's actually running in front of something. Dominant teams who are in genuine control do not need to soften their tone this quickly after only 3 races. What Toto's doing is trying to get ahead of the story before the story gets ahead of Toto. And I wish to take you back to around the time of the pre-season and to do with the compression ratio stuff. The language that Toto Wolff was using was not calm or composed or stoic even. No, he was resorting to saying teams should just get their shizzle together. And of course, the word snitching to the FIA regarding the compression ratios. That's a really interesting word, Toto, to use. Snitching, as in the rival teams were snitches and snitches get stitches. It's quite nasty and really defensive too. The team principal of the most dominant car in Formula One, with now 2 closed loopholes, a regulation vote just days away as of recording this video, and 4 simultaneous pressures pressing on a 3-race advantage, had been using language akin to personal betrayal about legitimate FIA submissions from his competitors. You don't reach for that word from a position of comfort. This is not the same Toto Wolff I recall seeing a lot of during the mid-2010s, throughout the entire domination era of Mercedes, when they genuinely looked calm and collected. And it's also telling me that Wolff is very much missing having a sparring partner of a similar magnitude and calibre, a Christian Horner-like figure. I'm not saying exactly like Christian Horner, but somebody who could emulate Christian Horner. The closest we've got right now, it's not Fred Vasseur, it's Zak Brown. But even then, he's not the team principal, he's the CEO of McLaren Racing, who's not there every single weekend, and he's also a Mercedes customer. We have got Toto acting like a loose cannon, and we all are starting to realise that, hey, maybe he's not quite as benevolent as we thought back in the day. And you could even argue that his fingerprints all over these current regulations are actually damaging the integrity of Formula One as the pinnacle of motorsport. And that's before we get to Miami and see how all this pans out. But at the same time, a Mercedes driver, of all things, has not had to rely on such words of defensiveness and nastiness at all. One with 2 wins in 3 races. The youngest driver in F1 history to lead the championship, a record Lewis Hamilton had held since 2007 by more than 2.5 years. When Mercedes replaced the 7-time world champion with a teenager who'd never started an F1 race before and skipped Formula 3 entirely, the argument wasn't really about whether it was brave, but whether it was right. We all remember Monza 2024 in its first practice session, and his Formula 2 campaign, which didn't exactly set the world alight, although, admittedly, that was a brand new regulation year for F2, and Prema were really struggling with those regulations. It affected Oliver Behrmann too, and look what he's doing right now. But anyway, the arguments against this driver, as far as I'm concerned, they are closed. He has got nothing left to prove now. The answers to the questions that we posed to Mercedes and Kimi 2 years ago, they have been answered permanently. They have now been sent off to the record books, and they will be remembered for forever and a day. Antonelli has already made an impression in Formula One's 76-year history, regardless of what Ferrari or Mercedes or the FIA does next. Seriously, I went looking for Antonelli interviews where he complains about being targeted, where he talks about rivals running to the FIA, where he says anything that suggests he feels the walls are closing in the way Wolf's language implies that they do, or even in a manner his teammate Russell has also talked about. They don't exist. Not in any format, language, or interview this season. His take on Ferrari closing in thanks to the ADUO? He's not worried. He's only focusing on himself. On the championship fight potentially with George Russell? Again, he's not concerned. He's actually just, again, thinking about himself. What about the notion that rivals of Mercedes will catch up? He knows that they will. He's completely fine with it. Talk about somebody who's projecting nonchalance. Wow! Indeed, the obvious read would be to say that Kimi Antonelli is really composed, especially for a 19-year-old. Mature beyond his years. The only adult in the Mercedes garage at the moment, because Toto's being defensive, George is being defensive, Kimi, nothing. But there's something more structural behind all of that, and I think the reason why Wolf and Russell are being a little bit more vocal, let's just say, is that all of this comes down to a matter of credibility. Their credibility will be tested a lot this year. Wolf's is attached to the dominance lasting. Not the wins alone, but how the wins are won. The man who spent years in the rooms where the regulations for this year were written, who lobbied for the MGUH removal, whose team pre-cleared the compression ratio approach, whose engineers found the MGUK loophole? If the advantage built from all of that gets legislated away before the summer break, everyone who had spent the last 3 years accusing Mercedes of regulatory capture will be able to just go say, "Aha! I told you so! That's exactly what had been happening!" Myself cottoning onto this just a few weeks ago, after having initial suspicions during the winter. And Toto wouldn't be able to argue back. In fact, I think all of this will ultimately go to the Daimler boardroom, as in, we did all of this preparation for years and years and years to sustain this domination and understanding of hybrid powertrains, and everyone else is still caught up, and we're not even at the summer break yet. Can you explain that, Toto? What happened here? I mean, for George Russell, isn't it obvious? He's only got a contract for 2026, although Toto claims there could be more years spent together. 2037, apparently, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. He does not, Toto, do long-term contracts. In fact, if his recent words have been anything to go by, he could easily fire both drivers on the spot. That's apparently what he did with Rosberg and Hamilton after Spain 2016. He fired them to try and teach them a lesson. But nevertheless, Russell arrived this year as the pre-season favourite because he was the experienced one. He had managed to ride off of the back of 2025 being his best season ever. 4th in the standings, best of the rest, with a couple of wins to his name, really looking good as his first season as Mercedes team leader. But as has become clear in recent times, there is really no such thing as a team leader at Mercedes, really. He's also the GPDA co-director, which puts him in the position of publicly advocating for fixes to regulations his own team wrote. On Monday, he sat in a virtual meeting, apparently, with Max Verstappen. The FIA and FOM representatives were there too, helping explain what these cars feel like from the inside. The people who didn't design these regulations are now the ones being asked to repair them. And Russell is somehow on both sides of that line. He's currently behind the teenager in his own garage, and if the car gets pegged back while that gap remains, there's no team result to soften it. Individual quality will be measured in a way a constructor's lead can't protect you from. And if you're a Russell fan and you're uncomfortable with that notion after years of hope that he could be contending a world championship, well, in life, sometimes you just have to feel uncomfortable. Not only with that, but with stuff in general. I myself am an Oscar Piastri fan, and do you think I felt comfortable in the back end of 2025 in the first couple of races this year? No, I didn't. I felt extremely uncomfortable and gutted. But if you can just accept that sometimes in life you will feel uncomfortable and awkward about a certain prospect, and you remain steadfast and firm and believe in your driver no matter what through thick and thin, you'll come out the other side, maybe a much richer person, with a better understanding of life and a fresher perspective. Maybe expand your outlook, and when the moments of good times do come for your driver, they will be all the sweeter. In any case, whatever happens, even if Kimi Antonelli falls off a little bit during 2026, he'll have already gotten what he came here for, Formula One. The records can't be reversed. The wins won't disappear, unless there's a scandal of such magnitude it races Mercedes records entirely, but that's a complete flight of fancy. As of now, he finished first in China and Japan under whatever regulations were in play, and that's what the history books will add. He's the only person in this situation who benefits from the regulations being flawed and from them being fixed. The window of opportunity that they created for himself and Mercedes provided him the opportunity to answer the questions that came his way and have been for the last few years, ever since he was first on the radar of maybe replacing either Russell or Hamilton, say, in 2027 or 2028, not 2025. If that window of opportunity does close in time for the first American race of the season, it won't really matter to Kimi because he'll have already done the job. He doesn't have to be the leader of the World Championship to feel comfortable or anything like that. He only has to feel comfortable this year after having won some races and gotten some pole positions and shut many of the doubters up. As in, we can all start to think, ah yeah, okay, Kimi's in this for the long haul. He certainly proved his worth. And all of this is done at the age of 19. In fact, he got this success so quickly into his career that when he got onto the top step in Japan, he couldn't be handed a bottle of champagne because he's only 19. The legal drinking age in Japan is 20. Right now, the sport's bickering amongst itself, as well as the fans, about loopholes and credibility and who snitched to who. And the kid who's part of the center of all of this debate, he's having a great time. He's covered in confetti. He's drinking sparkling water or rose water. And he's got a big smile on his face. And he's giving the entire country of Italy a hugely joyous moment to celebrate. Viewing figures in Italy are through the roof this year. And everyone is looking to Maurizio Arrivabene, who made the decision to just pass on Kimi because he was too young and didn't really see much right to write home about, unlike Gwen LeGru of Mercedes, who did see a lot in Kimi, and thinking, we could have had this guy. We could have had an Italian leading Ferrari and winning races and flying the flag for our country. And now we're having to do that for Mercedes. Whereas with Kimi, well, he's completely unbothered. He's the only guy in the room right now is making sense. And if Kimi continues this Gen Z-like nonchalance against George Russell, and George Russell continues to emulate that one photo where he's got the angry look of God under his face, then he's going to win the argument in terms of the compulsion of the fans. The two Mercedes drivers who are being more endeared to with the neutrals, it's Kimi, because he's not reacting like his teammate and his boss are. So yeah, he can be mature, but he doesn't need to be an adult yet. He just needs to enjoy himself. Two wins right now before he's 20? Not bad. And your next act is to go over to this video here and enjoy yourself there. I'll just go and get myself freshened up and I'll be right with you.